for your country, or you think you know what your country is, or you think you're some great, knowledgeable patriot because you served 20 years in the armed forces, or 2 years, or 5 years, or 10 years, or whatever it was. Hey, buddy. Hey, lady. Stick it where the sun don't shine, because you don't know nothing if you don't know that document front, backwards, inside and out, upside down. And it's not good enough just to know it and memorize it. You have to understand it, which means you had to have read all of the documents, letters, papers, of the founding fathers. If you haven't done those things, don't ever try to tell me that you know something about this country. Because when I'm done with you, you will eat your words, you'll probably eat your shoes, your socks, and your underwear to boot. You'll be so embarrassed, so pissed off, that you'll run out screaming, trying to find some evidence to prove me wrong. Of course, you won't be able to do it. The treason in this country is so rampant now that nobody even knows that it's happening because they don't know what this government was supposed to be. They never knew what they had, and therefore couldn't possibly know when they have lost it. And they lost it a long time ago. People call me and say, when is all this going to happen, Bill? It happened years ago. It is escalating now into despotism, into a police state. We already have a national Gestapo. Your police departments are being trained to participate in it, and your children are being taught at school to become the brown shirts of tomorrow, just like Hitler's little brown shirts were in Nazi Germany, to rat on their parents.
When's all this going to happen, Bill?
You ignorant ass! Because that's exactly what you are. When you say that.
When's it gonna happen, Bill?
If you read your Constitution, you will find that it happened so many years ago, you probably weren't even born yet. The country described in the Constitution for the United States of America is long gone, dead, buried. And if you try to dig it up, all you're gonna find is some moldy old bones. We're living under tyranny today. Everybody, and I mean everybody without exception, in the establishment media, and I am not accepting any of them, and who serve in government office, in any office, right down to the lowest clerk in the U.S. Forest Service, are nothing but the biggest pack of treasonous scumbag liars that ever lived on the face of this earth. They are party to the treason because they don't object to it. You know why? Because they're just as stupid as all the rest of you. Just as stupid as all the rest of you. I'm amazed continually. Listen to this. If you want the whole document, you can find it on our website. In stage three, progressive controlled disarmament would proceed to a point where no state would have the military power to challenge the progressively strengthened United Nations peace force, and all international disputes would be settled according to agreed principles of international conduct. The peacekeeping capabilities of the United Nations would be sufficiently strong, and the obligations of all states under such arrangements sufficiently far-reaching as to assure peace and the just settlement of differences in a disarmed world. That is a direct quote from the continuing policy of the United States of America as first revealed publicly in State Department publication 7277. It's not something I made up. This is the avowed policy of the United States government. President Ford, on his return from Vladivostok in the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, where he had signed an agreement drafted at the Strategic Arms Limitation Talks, or what you commonly know as SALT, the SALT Treaty, President Ford announced in a typically mixed metaphor that he had put a cap on the arms race. In the light of previous deals with the communists, such a pronouncement was incredible. Absolutely incredible. How could he have said such a thing? It conjured up memories of Chamberlain, newly arrived from Munich, standing on the sacred ground in which his head was buried, and announcing through the fan that the treaty in his hand was proof that we would have peace in our time, Herr Hitler. Would not mount any more military expeditions. And while the Marxist press was singing hosannas to SALT II as the pinnacle of détente, folks, is French for both a trigger and a lessening of tensions, lest you think you know the meaning of the word, the communists were gobbling up territory faster than the Oklahoma sailors in the opening of the Cherokee Strip in 1898. Using Soviet arms, the communists were sweeping through Cambodia and South Vietnam, and with the planned opening of the Suez Canal, they were preparing to link their naval forces in the Mediterranean and the Indian Ocean. President Ford thought that he had put a cap on everything. And Portugal, a long-time ally of ours, was being converted into a Soviet outpost in Western Europe. Now, if this is détente, ladies and gentlemen, bring back the Cold War. The road towards SALT began at the dawn of the atomic age. For those of you who weren't paying attention, when Marxist scientists and academics standing at the Wailing Wall of Disarmament began to bemoan their fear that America's superior nuclear capacity would somehow frighten a worried Soviet Union into launching a major war. The solution to this pile begins with the Pugwash Conference. Most of you have never heard of it. Maybe 0.1% of all listening to this broadcast ever heard of Pugwash in their entire life. Well, that's where the pearl began. But I'm telling you tonight, it might conclude with the first surrender of a disarmed United States of America. Because that's where we're going. In 1955, the Parliamentary Association for World Government issued a call for a series of conferences on science and world affairs between Russians and American scientists and intellectuals. This was in 1955. That's why I said earlier, most of you listening weren't even alive. And most of the treason that has brought us to this day and this hour and this minute occurred. They wanted Russian and American scientists and intellectuals to attend these conferences, and attend they did. The first was held in 1957 at the home of a man who they called a Russophile, someone who loved Russia, Cyrus Eaton, in Pugwash, Nova Scotia. Pugwash, Nova Scotia, thus the name Pugwash Conference. Eaton, who began his career as secretary to John D. Rockefeller and is now a business partner of the Rockefellers, or at least his family is, in promoting communist trade, earned the Lenin Peace Prize for fronting the deal and financing the first five conferences. Since then, folks, more than 50 have been held, most of them outside the United States, all, every one of them, financed by the tax-exempt Rockefeller and Council on Foreign Relations foundations. And then on September 23rd, 1960, 3 years after the first Pugwash conference, the Soviet Union presented a plan for, quote, total and complete disarmament, end quote, to the United Nations. You'll hear that phrase echoed later. In fact, you already have. You probably forgot. It was just a few moments ago. It called for a systematic reduction in arms by major powers of the world. The so-called Soviet plan immediately became the beneficiary of extremely influential American support when a group of powerful proponents of disarmament within the Council on Foreign Relations endorsed it. This was no accident, folks. This wasn't something the Soviets pulled out of their hat. You see, a secret Council on Foreign Relations disarmament program entitled Study Number 7 was made public a few months later. It was prepared by the Council on Foreign Relations for the Senate Committee on Foreign Relations. The Study Number 7 argued that the United States must, number one, search for an international order in which many policies are jointly undertaken by states with differing political, economic, and social systems, and including states labeling themselves as socialist, which really means communist. And don't you ever forget it. They taught you that somehow socialism is not related to communism, and therefore is not our enemy, and that's a lie. In order to build such a new international order, a new world order, the Council on Foreign Relations said, we must maintain and gradually increase the authority of the United Nations and conduct serious negotiations to achieve international agreement on limitation, reduction, and control of armaments. And here's the absolutely amazing part. This Council on Foreign Relations position paper had preceded the Soviet proposal of September 23rd, 1960 by nearly a year. Because the Council on Foreign Relations had forwarded a copy of Study Number 7 to the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union agreed and turned in Study Number 7 as their proposal for total and complete disarmament to the United Nations. You see, pugwashed or not, folks, the two schemes were. Identical. This pugwash, Council on Foreign Relations, Soviet Union conspiracy, is one of the most brilliant achievements in psychological warfare since the Trojan Horse. While Americans were being told of the horrors of nuclear war and the supposed advantages of limiting our defenses, and the crash of an extraterrestrial flying saucer in Roswell, New Mexico, all pointing toward world government, the Russians were arming to the teeth. It was in June of 1964 that the Ford Foundation, already famous for bankrolling Rockefeller-approved fascist socialist causes, put up $325,000 for a pugwash production called the, quote, Joint U.S. USSR study group in disarmament, end quote. In other words, we are going to sit down with the sworn enemies of the United States of America and agree to a plan to disarm so that we could not ever again defend ourselves against any enemy, foreign or domestic. The climate that Rockefeller partner Cyrus Eaton's Pugwash Group and the Council on Foreign Relations had created was well established. Advocates of the New World Order began to crow that world government was at last in sight. It was, in fact, the policy of the United States government and still is. George W. Bush is working toward world government, disarmament, globalism, the redistribution of wealth. His latest plan calls for not loans to deadbeat third world nations, but grants. Grants. Who earned that money? Where'd it come from? If you thought he was going to be your savior. Believe me, you get stupider every year. Every single year, the American public gets stupider in their head, sinks down farther into the sand. Or for the most part, up their butt. September 1961, the Department of State released as the policy of the United States government State Department Publication 7277, entitled Freedom from War, the United States Program for General and Complete Disarmament in a Peaceful World. It was a three-stage program which provided, and I quote, in stage three, progressive controlled disarmament and continuously developing principles and procedures of international law would proceed to a point where no state would have the military power to challenge the progressively strengthened United Nations peace force, and all international disputes would be settled according to agreed principles of international conduct. The peacekeeping capabilities of the United Nations would be sufficiently strong, and the obligations of all states under such arrangements sufficiently far-reaching as to assure peace and a just settlement of differences in a disarmed world. Have you watched the progression? Of the formation of the United Nations peacekeeping forces? Now listen to me very carefully. This is no coincidence. The very same month, ladies and gentlemen, that State Department Publication 7277 was issued, the United States Arms Control and Disarmament Agency was created by Congress. Never existed before. Didn't have any buildings, no offices, no personnel assigned to it, nothing. Now listen to this. Within 48 hours of its formation by Congress, the new agency presented its disarmament scheme to the United Nations. Naturally, it was a carbon copy of the Council on Foreign Relations and Soviet Pugwash proposals presented to the United Nations by the communists the year before. While the newspapers and television have prattled on endlessly about disarmament, not one single word has been said about the other side of the coin. You see, all of those proposals call for arming the United Nations. And you're hearing it more and more today. kept secret
since the formula
for Coca-Cola. I quote, since 1959, the agreed ultimate goal of the negotiations has been general and complete disarmament. In effect, the total elimination of all armed forces and armaments except those needed to maintain internal order within states and to furnish the United Nations with peace forces. While the reductions were taking place, a United Nations peace force would be established and developed. And by the time the plan was completed, it would be so strong that no nation could challenge it. When they're finished, you won't be allowed to even have a shotgun. Nothing. Not even a BB gun. And notice that the document said, since 1959, ladies and gentlemen, the United States Arms Control and Disarmament Agency was not established until September 1961. But it was in 1959 that the Council on Foreign Relations Study Number 7 was prepared and its contents were transmitted to the Soviet Union. How successful have these New World Order disarmers been in implementing their plans? What has happened to our military strength since disarmament was accepted as official U.S. government policy? What happened to the Strategic Air Command? What has happened to our intercontinental ballistic missiles? What has happened to our fleet of B-52 bombers? What has happened to many of our ballistic missile submarines? The first Secretary of Defense to implement this policy was Council on Foreign Relations member Robert S. McNamara, who was the Secretary of Defense from 1961 through 1968. The betrayers by Phyllis Schlafly and Chester Ward, they discussed McNamara's wrecking job. When Robert McNamara left office, they note that he had reduced our nuclear striking force by 50% while the Soviets had increased theirs by 300%. Caused the U.S. to lose its lead in nuclear delivery vehicles, scrapped three-quarters of our multi-megaton missiles, cut back the originally planned 2,000 Minuteman missiles to 1,000, destroyed all our intermediate and medium-range missiles, canceled our 24-megaton bomb, scrapped 1,455 of 2,710 bombers left over from the Eisenhower administration, disarmed 600 of the remaining bombers of their strategic nuclear weapons, frozen the number of Polaris submarines at 41, refusing to build any more missile firing submarines, refused to allow development of any new weapon systems except the TFX, which was the F-111. Canceled Skyboat, Pluto, Dinosaur, and Orion missile systems. In fact, McNamara, ladies and gentlemen, Robert S. McNamara, destroyed more operational United States strategic weapons than the Soviets could have destroyed in a full-scale atomic attack. And we still had one of the largest militaries and the most powerful military forces in the entire world. And what has happened since then? Trucks on the way to be sheared, and once you have been sheared, you will be given a Judas goat that you will look on as a savior who will lead you to the slaughter. Listen very carefully to me. Way back, ladies and gentlemen, in the early 60s, the Joint Chiefs of Staff of all of the military forces of the United States of America proposed that the United States government mounts terrorist attacks upon America as pretext for a Cuban invasion. Just like Hitler burned the Reichstag in order to be able to attack his enemies and remove them from opposition so the Nazi Party could take the majority of seats in the German Congress, and Hitler could mount the throne as the Chancellor, the Reich Chancellor of Germany. After, of course, the German Constitution had been shredded and flushed down the toilet. In his new expose of the National Security Agency entitled Body of Secrets, author James Bamford highlights a set of proposals on Cuba by the Joint Chiefs of Staff, codenamed Operation Northwoods. He talks about it in his book. And I can hear you now yelling, "He made it up! James Bamford is a scumbag extremist, he made it up!" No, he didn't make it up, because I went to the National Archives, and directly from the National Archives, I obtained the memorandum for the Secretary of Defense, subject justification for U.S. military intervention in Cuba, top secret, dated 13 March 1962, signed by the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And in it, this document titled Justification for U.S. Military Intervention in Cuba was provided by the Joint Chiefs of Staff to Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara on March 13, 1962 as the key component of an operation called Northwoods. All one word. Written in response to a request from the chief of the Cuba Project, Colonel Edward Lansdale. The top secret memorandum describes U.S. plans to covertly engineer various pretexts that would justify a U.S. invasion of Cuba. These proposals, ladies and gentlemen, part of a secret anti-Castro program known as Operation Mongoose, included staging the assassinations of Cubans living in the, in the United States, developing a fake communist Cuban terror campaign in the Miami area, including shooting people in other Florida cities, and even in Washington, D.C., including sinking a boatload of Cuban refugees, real or simulated, faking a Cuban Air Force attack on a civilian jetliner, and concocting a Remember the Maine incident by blowing up a U.S. ship in Cuban waters and then blaming the incident on Cuban sabotage. Bamford says in his book that Operation Northwoods may be the most corrupt plan ever created by the United States government. So, would our government do such a thing? You're damn right. We should have known it anyway. When the United States did not look to participate in a war in Vietnam, and Congress was dead set against it, would never have approved it, the United States Navy staged a phony attack by North Vietnamese missile patrol boats against the destroyer USS Maddox in the Gulf of Tonkin. It was called the Tonkin Gulf Incident. President Johnson used it to stir up American sentiment in saying that the North Vietnamese had attacked one of our ships full of their baby boys, and so we must go to war. But it was a lie, every word of it. It never happened. Never happened. But The battleship Maine was not blown up by saboteurs. A naval investigation determined after the hulk had been explored and raised, they determined that the explosion occurred within the battleship Maine, not from without, and was probably the result of a coal dust explosion in one of the coal bunkers. And yet we went to war with Spain over that incident. What do you want to bet? There weren't no accident. No accident. And I could go on and on and on and on and on. But I think you get the message. Unless you're still out there saying, "You made it all up, Trooper!" If you're doing that, go to our website. You can download this top secret document right there. It's been unclassified over the years. We made it available to you. If you don't have a computer and you'd like to have a copy, it's 14 pages. Send me $14 and I'll send it to you. H-O-T-T. Us, Nate. Send us a donation now if you want this broadcast to continue. Alan Wiener is screaming at me for money, and I don't have any money to send it. So, if you value this broadcast, if you get real work from it, send your donations now and pay for it. If you're a stinking little socialist puke-faced creep that thinks everything in the world is owed to you, and that you don't ever have to pay for anything, and that in the New World Order, you're going to be well taken care of. You're going to be one of the first ones that they kill. It always happens that way because they don't like you any more than we do. You see, they need workers in the socialist order because nothing is free. They just have to convince you that if you do the work, everything is free. I don't know how you keep falling for that, but you always do. Anyway, this broadcast is not free. If you're listening for free, turn it off. Don't ever listen to it again. I don't care if you ever hear my voice again. I don't care about you. Go down to Cuba. Castro's looking for you. He loves you. He needs you. He will take care of you. And everything is free. Including your turn out in the cane fields. It's free. They'll even bus you out there. They'll give you a machete for free. And you get to cut cane for free. All three. Wish you luck, bon voyage. If we get enough donations, I'll help pay for your ticket. I'll tell you what, even if we don't get enough donations, I will fast for as long as it takes to pay for half of your ticket if you'll pay for the other half. Okay? I promise you that. I will do it. So if there's enough of you, it could actually kill me and cause me to starve to death, and I would be very happy doing it as long as I know that you're out of this country somewhere else where we don't have to put up with your lazy, stinking, good-for-nothing butts anymore. Don't like it? Turn off the radio. Go to Cuba. Jump in the lake. Take a long hike off a short pier. I don't care. Get out of my country. Stop destroying it. You're one of those sheeple who have been stupid all these years. Stop being stupid. Make a promise to yourself. You gotta stop it. Go look in the mirror. Confront the problem facing this country today will be that facing you in your own mirror. Don't be ignorant anymore. Learn. First, what your country is supposed to be. And then look around and see what it is compared to what it's supposed to be, and then you'll see the source of all your problems aside from that looking back at you in the mirror when you perform that little exercise. Shameful, isn't it? Sure is. Shameful. So, I went from being such a nice, wonderful guy last night, right back to my old self, not willing to put up with any of it, not for one single moment, period. I will not give you any indication that your behavior, your attitude, and your status quo is okay, because it's not. It's the American people who are destroying this country. because of their ignorance, their stupidity, and their apathy. And the fact that they never try to discover the truth of anything that they're told, they react emotionally and go along with what the herd wants them to feel and say and do. And every time they do it, it takes us 1 mile closer to the destruction of the greatest, freest, most opportune, greatest standard of living, greatest educational feats, the greatest manufacturing organizations ever upon the face of this earth. Ever upon the face of this earth. And every single citizen, no matter what his status, no matter what his birth, no matter what his rank in society, no matter where he lived, no matter how poor, had the same opportunity as every other person in this nation. And they could either take advantage of it, or they could waste their life. Whichever they chose was their business and their responsibility. Not yours and not mine. You look around on the wealth of this country and you realize that everybody who ever came here started off dirt poor. And you can see that it's the best system that ever existed. Under socialism, the people pretend to work, the state pretends to pay them, the vodka factories thrive, and everybody spends 24 hours of every day drunk, trying to produce as little as they can because they know they're going to get as little as can be given in return. And that's exactly where we're headed, on a roller coaster. On a roller coaster. Wake up, America. You've been had. You've been had. And most of you are so ignorant, apathetic, and stupid, you don't even know it. You don't know what you lost because you never knew what you had. And believe me, you've lost it. Good night. God bless each and every single one of you. Good night, Annie Poon Allison. I love you. Watch the Wizard of Oz again. It's all there.